welcome to the Creative Pen Podcast. I'm Joanna Penn, thriller author and professional speaker, bringing you interviews, inspiration and information on writing, publishing options and marketing ideas for your book. You can find the episode show notes, your free Author 2.0 blueprint and lots more information at thecreativepen.com. And that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hello, creatives. I'm Joanna Penn, and this is episode number 248 of the podcast. And it is the 20th of December, 2015, as I record this in Christmas week. So happy Christmas, everyone, and happy holidays if you don't celebrate Christmas. And it is super mild here in Bath, so we're not actually feeling very Christmassy in my house. We will go to my dad's on Christmas Day, which isn't very far away now since I moved. And then heading to Prague on the 27th of December. So when next show goes out on the 28th, I will be in Prague having a bit more Christmassy time because it might, you never know, there might be some snow and it will definitely be a lot colder. So I'll be drinking mulled wine on the streets of that wonderful city. I've been to Prague before, but I'm excited about going again. My husband hasn't been. And also we are going to visit, I've booked a day trip to Sedlec, which is the chapel. If you've read my novel, Crypt of Bone, Sedlec features in it. It's this incredible church that is basically built with human bones from plague victims, millions of them. And you can tell by my voice, it excites me. So if you're into that kind of thing, then Crypt of Bone will be a really Christmassy read for you. Otherwise, anyway, I will no doubt share photos on my JF Pen Facebook page, facebook.com/JFPenAuthor, if you like that kind of thing. So anyway, I'm excited. I'm more excited about that than I am about Christmas. Anyway, today I have an interview with Lindsay Barocca, who is a fantastic fantasy author who first came on the show 3 years ago when she had just moved full-time as a fiction author. And so we catch up with Lindsay and what's changed in 3 years, what is working now, as well as her prolific writing process, and also how she marketed a pen name she has no author platform for, as in she started writing under a new name and didn't tell her existing fans. So that will be really interesting for people because, of course, many people are just starting out. And once you have 30 books, it's much easier to sell books. But when you have one with no brand, then yeah. So Lindsay talks all about that. In publishing news this week, we're kind of into the roundup season where everyone starts posting roundups of 2015 and predictions about 2016. So I'm actually going to save those for the next two shows. So the 28th show, I'll be sort of doing some roundups of the year. And then the following week, which will be the 4th of January, I'll be looking forward and doing some predictions. The only thing that caught my eye this week, which I thought was interesting, was there's a blog called publishingperspectives.com that always has a more global focus, and I find it quite interesting. And this week they talked about Bibliomanager. So Bibliomanager launches print on demand in Spain and in Argentina. I'm really struggling to speak this morning. I clearly need a holiday. Six publishers in Argentina, Colombia, Ecuador, Mexico, and Spain have joined forces to launch Bibliomanager, offering print books via print on demand to reduce costs and attend to real market requirements. Now, although this isn't open to indies, I actually think it's really interesting because what it means is Latin America is opening up to the technology that indies need to make sales. So if Bibliomanager allows print on demand or, for indie authors, then that will be a really big deal. That's also something, there are opportunities in India for print on demand as well, but at the moment the costs are still quite high. So once the traditional publishers get in, you know, join forces in this type of thing, I would expect to see costs come down. So I'm quite excited about that. And I will go into some reflections more next week, but I think 2014 was a kind of year of audio. People discovered audio in 2014, and 2015 has been the year of global and going wide on multiple platforms to reach more readers. And I'll talk more about that next week. So in terms of rushing towards the end of the year, I have a sort of list on my wall where I look at the things that I want to achieve but in a certain amount of time. And I had, by Christmas, I had 9 things on my list, which I did once when we moved house, 2 months ago. I put this list on my wall, and so I've been, you know, rushing headlong to finish. And I'm really excited because finally I've put out a book on successful self-publishing. Yes, it is called Successful Self-Publishing, How to Self-Publish an Ebook and Print Book. And because I still get so many questions every day about how to do the basics. And so I have finally done that. So you can get that book. It is free on iBooks, Nook and Kobo, and hopefully will be free on Amazon by the time you listen to this. I've been reporting the price match. I've been emailing Author Central. And of course, you can report the lower price if you want to get it to free, or it's 99 cents or equivalent. So the aim is for it to be a perma-free. So that's Successful Self-Publishing. And there are other books that I've sent people to before, but I wanted my own spin on things, which is different to other people's, as it, you know, we're all indies, we all do things differently. So that book is out now, and it's kind of aimed at if you're just starting out and you want to self-publish for the first time, or if you are self-publishing but you're not really getting the success you want and you want to streamline your processes or improve your processes, or for traditionally published authors who might be really great writers and have even a massive backlist but don't know anything about self-publishing. So it's really, you know, a successful self-publishing guide, as per all my nonfiction, does what it says on the box. So that's cool. And I've also done a multimedia version of the book, which is also called Successful Self-Publishing, but includes audiobook publishing as well. And that is a video course with downloadable audio and slides, 6 hours of me teaching how I self-publish and also how to market fiction and nonfiction. And again, aimed at new self-publishers or those who want to improve their processes. So while that book is free or incredibly cheap, the course is a premium video course, multimedia, but because you lot are awesome and I promised a special, I have a Christmas special for you, available until 1st of January 2016. So the course is $297, which also has a part payment plan on it, but you can get $100 off if you use this special link, thecreativepen.com/self-publishing special. So that is, and the links will be in the show notes as ever. thecreativepen.com/self-publishing special, and you'll get $100 off that price. Or you can redeem the coupon creatives at checkout. So I'm really happy that I've got those two things done, and I think they'll be really useful for people who are still getting themselves sorted with self-publishing. On other things, I am getting into the research for Destroyer of Worlds, and I just ordered a pile of DVDs. So I have The History of India, I have Sacred India and Ganges here on my desk, and really excited to go down the rabbit hole of research. While I normally read a lot of books for this type of thing, I already have a lot of ideas about what I want Destroyer of Worlds to be about in terms of India, Shiva Nataraja, and I have some, I have the opening scene in my head and I know quite a lot of it. But what I want the DVDs for is a lot of the backdrop and colour and flavour, I guess, which is so important, especially with India, which is such a colourful place and just wonderful. So I'm excited about that. This week I will be sort of mainlining Indian DVDs. Maybe I should be watching some Bollywood too. I probably will do that. Although my books are hardly Bollywood. What else? Yes, announcing the Smarter Artist Summit in Austin, Texas, 30th to 31st of March. It is run by the self-publishing podcast guys, Johnny, Sean and Dave. And I'll be speaking there. And so will Nick Stevenson on, obviously, book marketing. And Julie Huss, who's a brilliant romance author, really knowledgeable and very smart indie. Mark Lefebvre from Kobo also speaking, as well as Johnny, Sean and Dave. Plus a lot of networking. So it's 30th and 31st of March 2016. And you can go to smarterartistsummit.com. Or again, I will put the links in the show notes. And of course, that networking will be a lot of fun, may or may not involve karaoke, who knows. But it is a guilty pleasure of mine after a few too many margaritas. And I believe Austin is quite famous for its bars and music and things. Probably not karaoke then. But anyway, it will be fun, and I've never been to Texas, and so that will be really interesting. So here's what you've sent me this week. Amarvias, listening to the Creative Pen podcast while walking my dog on a beautiful morning. Picture of the lovely neighbourhood. Emily Benet, or Bennett, I think I've made that mistake before, wrote a post all about writing and money after listening to the show. Thanks for that, Emily. Eliza Peake, I've a long commute and I listen to your backlist every day. Gives me mojo. Super. Mark Lefebvre, also talking of Kobo, listens while driving in between Hamilton and Toronto in Canada. The podcast informs me and eases the tension of the often frustrating commute. Yes, I was quite shocked in Canada when I went to Toronto for my brother's wedding. My sister-in-law is Canadian, one of them. For a country that doesn't have that many people, the traffic was crazy. So, yeah. And Prasanjit emailed and said, we're talking about different prices for different markets. Now, this is really useful. So I want some reports from other markets. Prasanjit says that Indian ebooks would normally be 60 to 75 rupees. And I definitely need to adjust my prices. So last week we had, I think it was Matty, who made a sale in Britain or Australia once she changed her prices. And I think this will be the same in India, because obviously each market has their own sort of natural price. UK prices, for example, are lower than American prices. Australian prices are higher. India, so 60 to 75 rupees for an ebook. If you are in, you know, Japan, Brazil, you know, some of these other countries, it'd be great to know what the standard ebook prices are and what you're happy to pay. And together we will get together a price list for different markets. I think that'd be super useful. Richard Todd, listening on my 90-minute drive home in the dark after a four-hour meeting with federal bank examiners, dreaming about getting home and writing. Oh, Richard, that sounds rough. Whereas Dan Raymond says, out fishing sea trout. Oh, while listening to Stone of Fire on audio. Wanted to say, your novel is awesome, Joanna. Of course, I just threw that in there because, you know, it's about audio. Glad you enjoyed Stone of Fire, Dan. Meg Cowley, a lovely morning filled with illustration, tea and catching up with the podcast. Curtis and Matlock, listening in South Alabama, where flowers bloom in winter. That's a really nice novel title, Flowers Bloom in Winter. Not for one of my books again, but you know, maybe for like a late romance or something. Matthew Broff, listening while shoveling snow, hash Manitoba winter. And that snow looks super heavy, Matthew. So hope your back is okay. Austin Orr says, Russell Blake had such a rich perspective and background, a unique and instructive interview. Rosie Reist, here's a picture I took the other day while listening, a bit wetter today. It looks like Mont Saint-Michel, Rosie. Looks amazing. Natasha Boyd, listening while avoiding the sharp teeth of my new puppy. Super cute little furry picture there. Daniel Riding, on my commute, listening to your wonderful podcast, keeping me going this morning. Bethany Hensel. Oh, this was funny. Bethany says, OMG, for a minute I thought, yay, it's Monday, the podcast. And then I realised I'd already listened first thing this morning. Archives time. Thanks, Bethany. Glad you enjoyed the show that much. SJ Jonas, listening while cleaning the kitchen and eating clementines. Love winter citrus. They look lovely. Brittany Fichter, wrapping Christmas presents, listening to the podcast. And there's a lovely picture of your cute little baby by the Christmas lights. Daniel Parsons, loved the podcast with Russell Blake. 6 books per year is astounding. I'll have to get a treadmill desk. I've had quite a few comments about that this week. Emily Bennett also says, treadmill desk, anyone? Harper Bliss, listening to Russell Blake while walking home along the beach in Hong Kong. Picture of the beach. Hong Kong is definitely on my list to visit. And Harper, tell us what price we should price our ebooks in Hong Kong, because Hong Kong dollars are on the pricing page, I think, for Amazon and for Kobo and for iBooks. And finally, Rebecca J. Clark, listening to the podcast while stuck in traffic on an ugly grey day in the Pacific Northwest. So thank you, everybody, as ever, for your tweets and emails. I really enjoy hearing what you're doing while listening to the show. You can tweet me at The Creative Pen or email joanna@thecreativepen.com. Let me know where you are, what you're doing, and send me some pictures. And I still really want to make a montage. I've got to sort that out. Okay, well, today, this podcast episode is actually sponsored by my own self-publishing success course, because I'm allowed to do that because it's my show. And again, you can check it out at thecreativepen.com/self-publishing special or redeem coupon creatives at checkout. And of course, my time in producing the show is primarily sponsored by you guys. So a big thank you to all the people supporting on Patreon. And thanks especially to new patron Val Andrews. I really appreciate the Patreon support. And if you would like to support the show, you can go to patreon.com/thecreativepen. Okay, let's get on with the interview. Hi everyone, I'm Joanna Penn from thecreativepen.com, and today I'm here with Lindsay Barocca. Hi Lindsay.
Hello, it's great to be back, about 3 years later, I think.
I know, it's so funny, and we will come to that in a minute, but just a little introduction. Lindsay is the best-selling fantasy author of the Emperor's Edge and Dragon's Blood series, as well as loads of other fantasy and other books. So Lindsay, as you were saying, you were last on the podcast in September 2012, and I can't believe it's been so long, but just give us an update on what your author business looks like right now.
All right. Yeah, I had to go ahead and go back and look and see what I had published at that time, because I don't even remember. I'm coming up on 5 years now. Mm. And I guess that would have been about a year and a half into things. And it looks like I had about 5 books out, maybe the 6th one coming out back then. And now I have, I counted for you, Joanna, just because you're special, 21 novels under 21. My name. A bunch of novellas, 7 novels under the pen name that I started last year. So I'm closing in on 30, and yeah, lots of shorter stuff too. I just don't even count anything under 80,000 words or so. So yeah, so, and that's been good. And the, you know, I've got 2 main series now and a bunch of smaller things, and the income has continued to grow. So that's good. I feel like if you could just stick with this business long enough that more people find you, and you know, assuming people actually like your writing, that helps, that they go on and read your other series, that kind of thing. But so yeah, coming up on 5-year anniversary.
Yeah, which is amazing. And yeah, I originally had you on the show because we talked about building an author business slowly. And what I love is that, well, I don't know if anyone would call it slow, considering you now have 30 books in 5 years. You know, that's not slow by anyone's standards. But I think that you still have grown incrementally. Like, you haven't had like the one breakout book that gave you all of your income, right? You are pretty much broken down. All your income breaks down across your books.
No, yes. I've never really had like some humongous bestseller. I did have in January of this year, I put the 3 books in my Dragon Blood series into a box set and made that 99 cents for a BookBub ad. And that's kind of the first thing I've had that really kind of, after the ad, stuck at the top of the rankings. You know, it was like in the top 200 on Amazon for months, it seemed like. And so it really helped that series a lot. But, you know, you see what I have to do, put three books for 99 cents in order to, you know, I write steampunk. It's just not going to be ever like contemporary romance or something that there's just tons and tons of people reading it. So even with that series, that has some crossover appeal into epic fantasy and sword and sorcery. So I think that's kind of what people gravitated toward. But that helped. And then when you do get a kind of a boost like that, it helps if you've got like 8 books that people can go on and buy, right? Or, you know, a couple other series. And so that's, but no, I've never had like, I've never just crushed it with anything. And I don't know how likely that would be in the epic fantasy genre. I can't think of too many indie authors who have, you know, we'll stick up there for a while, maybe, you know, in the top 1,000, maybe some will get under 500 in the Amazon store, but that's pretty rare. I think it's definitely a smaller genre.
And again, that's why I think your story is so encouraging, because it's smaller genres, but, you know, by writing a lot of books, you make a good income and it keeps ticking up, which is fantastic. So I wanted to know, like, what is your writing process? You know, how does your writing process look now as somebody who has this many books and is basically a mature fiction writer? Mature in
wow.
a work sense.
You called me mature.
mature in a writing sense.
I know. But it's kind of funny. I still think of myself as pretty new to this all. When I, you know, you've had Catherine Rush, I think, maybe on here. Or I can't remember who else been on.
Dean was on, yeah.
Dean. Yeah. So those guys, obviously, that's what I think, like, somebody mature that's been in the business for like 30 years. But yeah, I have seen a lot of people come and go, I guess, in the last 5 years. And, you know, the first year for those listening, it's really been in the last couple years that my production's really gotten quite a bit. I don't know. I've just gotten to the point where I kind of know where the story's going. I outline it at the beginning and I write a draft in like 2 to 4 weeks. And I don't write short books. Those are usually like 100,000 words. So just throw that out there. But yeah, the first year I was still working full time, and I think I managed to publish about, I had 2 novels when I started, and I think I published 3 that year. So it's gradually improved. I used to just shoot for like 1,000 words a day. Now it's like 5 to 10,000 words a day when I'm working on a rough draft. I don't necessarily write when I'm editing. I kind of switch back and forth. So like finish the rough and like, oh, ready to do something different. And so like here's editing. Let's start on that for a week. And so but it is kind of a constant production schedule. I'll finish a rough draft. Just kind of quickly go over that, send it to the beta readers. I've got a couple sets for the different series, folks that are nice enough to follow along with my rather rapid schedule. And then while they have I'll usually be starting on the next book, whatever it's going to be, the next project. And then I get it back from them, make whatever edits that I agree with, you know, that they brought up, send it off to my editor. You know, and by the time I get that back, I'm pretty much almost ready to send the next thing off to the beta readers. So it's just, yeah, it's probably been about a book a month between myself and the pen name for the last 18, 24 months. And maybe I'll slow down at some point. Right now I have so many ideas. I'm like always, I'm in the middle of you know how it is now. I know you've got like, since the last time we talked, you know, you're halfway done the first one and then there's this shiny new idea and you can't wait to get started on the next one. So.
Which is really hard. And for that word count of 5,000 to 10,000 a day, are you dictating or are you typing, or how are you managing the it's basically physical exertion of that type of production?
Yeah, I'm mostly just a typer, but I will do kind of the outlining sometimes. I live in the mountains and I take my dogs out almost every day for like an hour or two, just hiking and let them run like crazy. And I'll be sitting and thinking, you know, plotting out the next couple of scenes that I'm going to work on for that day, maybe the next day. I'll sometimes dictate into my iPhone, like sort of the beats as the self-publishing guys call them. I don't know. I think that's from screenwriting, is it?
Yeah,
I don't know.
It's a screenwriting thing, yeah.
Yeah, so I will kind of do that so that when I do sit down at the computer, I pretty much know exactly what I'm going to write. And, you know, if I'm not screwing around on the internet, which we can't always promise that's not happening, you know, I'll knock out 2,000 words an hour. So if, you know, if I'm pretty focused, I can be done with my writing for the day, you know, by like 4 or 5. And in the evenings, I can mess around, and that's kind of when I try to catch up on email and things like that. But sometimes when I'm doing a rough draft, I'll just ignore email for like a week at a time. And sorry, it's hard to ever feel like you're getting ahead with email, because as soon as you write something, answer something, they respond, and you're like, but no, I'm trying to clean my email box. Don't write back at least till tomorrow.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean. Well, that's incredible. And I mean, I've had Liliana Hart on, Russell Blake, you know, other people who write a lot. And, you know, talking about burnout with the kind of production, do you ever feel like that? I mean, you're pretty chirpy. do you ever feel that there's kind of burnout?
It's morning.
It is morning, yeah.
And I have my latte here. I'm perky. Gosh, not yet. You know, I think it helps. I started the pen name. It's kind of, I almost felt like I was publishing too quickly. I think if you're doing like romance or something where they really devour the books quickly, they probably don't care. You can probably publish every 2 weeks and people are like, more, more, more. You know, I do have some readers like that for sure, but I think fantasy readers in general are less of the read a whole series in a weekend kind of thing. So doing the pen name, and for the record, it's science fiction romance, and I'm probably the only person that has a pen name that isn't a less popular genre than her main name. So those are fun, and it's something different, and I kind of divided it. Those are a little smuttier, a little more details in the happiness area.
Active romance.
Yeah, I like that. That's from Mark, Lefebvre, right?
Yeah, Kobo, yeah.
Yep. Yep. So those are fun. And it, by kind of having the two different genres that I work in, even though they're kind of similar types of stories in many ways, science fiction and fantasy, I think it does kind of help keep things fresh too. And having a couple different series that I work on.
Well, and I mean, on that pen name, because that was a really interesting experiment, because, you know, you'd built up this audience with your fantasy. You have a blog, you're on Twitter, you have a podcast, and you did an experiment with the pen name. You didn't actually tell anyone, did you? You didn't tell your existing audience who it was. Can you talk a bit about that process, and how did you launch a new author brand and make any decent money?
Yeah, part of the reason I actually wanted to do it that way was because I would do a blog post and I'd get kind of, you know, most people were like, oh yeah, congratulations, good job. I'm glad that what you tried worked. Then there'd be some bitter people that are like, of course it worked for you. You have a fan base. The rest of us don't have readers yet. So I was like, no, you can still, you know, develop a fan base and get readers and sell books. And this was October 2014 that I launched the pen name. So I kept it secret for the first couple of months, and I launched three books there kind of quickly. First one I put out at 99 cents just to see if I could, you know, get some traction. And then the second one I released a week later. I'd written the first three, so I was just kind of editing so I could release them pretty much one after the other. And as soon as I released the second one, I made the first one free, and surprisingly, Amazon actually price matched it earlier than I expected. So one was free everywhere. Book two was $3.99. And I believe two and three I put into KU. Just, you know, it seemed like you're getting the rankings boost. It might be easier to be in the top 100 of a category. So third book came out after about 4 weeks. And I bought ads for the first book as soon as it became free. I got the cheap ones that, you know, we don't care if you have reviews. It was like BK Knights on Fiverr, and I don't even remember a couple other sites that were like $5 or $10 kind of thing. And, you know, and that was enough to give. And I had a pretty decent cover for that niche. So science fiction romance, go look at the covers. They're not really, they're Photoshopped. They're not most of them. It's hard because it's hard to find science. It's same with steampunk. It's hard to find models. It just,
wearing the right stuff.
Yeah. Please be wearing science fiction clothes if you don't mind, or they have to be shirtless, which is fine because that's trendy in any century. But so it went pretty well, I think, by having three books ready to throw out there pretty quickly. And I'd actually tried Wattpad for the pen name the few months before the launch and didn't really see much from that. So I think the best thing was just making that first book free and getting some ads and, you know, having the next book ready to go right away. And yeah, I think the pen name made about 10,000 in that first 2 months. Of course, it falls off because I don't work on it as much. It's probably too much on my plate, really, to try to keep and maintain and build two author brands. But I have launched a serial in August for the pen name, like a 6-part serialized story. And that did really well. I put it in KU because it hasn't had too much traction on the other sites, and I don't really care because it's the pen name. It's just easier just to have to advertise and play around on Amazon. And At the time, Rachel Aaron/Rachel Bach had just posted her numbers for her. This was when a new KU change came, which I don't know if you want to talk about, but so it was Pages Red. And anyway, the serial did really well and way made more than I was expecting, thanks in large part to Kindle Unlimited. And but, you know, I don't do it with my regular name. I really like, you know, much like you, I prefer to be out there everywhere and just try to grow my brand on all of the platforms. But with the pen name, it's just... too much work to try to do all the social media and try to do everything for all the different sites.
Right. So you pretty much, I mean, so launching a new name, it was Volume. So having the three books, it was putting the first one for free and promoting it for free, pretty much. And that is that still what you would recommend for anybody starting out? I mean, it's very hard for people to hear that they need three books. And it's like that advice that I remember hearing when I only had one book. And I was like, no, I'm putting it out there. I'm going to be the one that will make this work. What do you think? I mean, is there any hope for people with just one book?
No, I get it. It took me 7 years to finish my first novel. So there was some World of Warcraft years in there too, kind of distracting things. But I know it takes a while. It's kind of later after you've written more books that the process gets easier and faster usually. You know, if you just don't have huge expectations for the first book, just put it out there, sure. But if you actually think that, you know, you really want to make some money, you really want to build up your fans, it's tough. I don't really know what to say when people only have one book. I'm like, go write a couple more. For myself, if I was doing another pen name or, you know, starting from scratch right now, I would just try to do the first three in a series, at least have like the rough drafts done. And then so I could release them, if not all at once, and like kind of the first three 1 month after the other. I've just seen with other series, even in my own that I've, or they're all my own, but under my regular name, you know, I've got some series, kind of when I finished my Emperor's Edge series, I wasn't sure what was going to be the next big project. So I started like three or four to see what had potential, which, you know, I think it would have been better if I just done the first, committed to doing three or four books in a new series and then seeing if it had potential. Because in the series where I only have one book out or two books out, those definitely, you know, they might start out okay. I've got readers that will try my new stuff, but they fall off when there's not anything else coming out. And you're not really, you don't have a reason to promote one lonely book in one. I just, yeah, if you really want to make a splash, I would say plan to write the first three in a series. And you know, if that's not you, that's not you, but it just helps. That's what I'll say. It's not like you can't possibly do well with just one book. I do see it. I think right now, if you do KDP Select, the fact that you get rankings boosts for the borrows on Amazon can help a lot. Just if you have a great cover and a great blurb, and if it's kind of a hits on the genre tropes, you know, if it's got wide appeal. I do see first-time authors, usually who are in KU, that will stick up there and sell well with one book. So it can happen.
Yeah, it can happen. But then it will drop off. You know, I think that's the thing. Even if you can get up the rankings. I was having this discussion with someone. It's like even Stephen King or, you know, even J.K. Rowling doesn't stay at number one. So you have to have a long, you know, you have to be thinking about the next one, even if it is just the first one. But let's talk about KU, because it feels like, because I, you know, I'm wide and I don't like having one company in charge of my income, which is, you know, why I push going wide. But although I understand why people also go it like you too. But do you think there's been a shift this year with the pages read going down, the payment per pages read going down, with some of the other things that we've seen with Amazon? Have you felt that the community is changing their mind around going wide in general?
You know, I think a lot of people, I think everybody pretty much doesn't want to be exclusive with Amazon. And so it's sort of they'll experiment and maybe they'll try it. And, you know, KU really only helps if you can leverage it into being in the top 100 in your category. And if you're selling like a book or two a week, it's probably not going to change anything. So you might as well go out there and be wide and maybe sell a book or two a week everywhere. If you're a new author and you're not really worried about your income yet, you're just like, you're not depending on it. You know, that's when maybe it's probably okay to be exclusive with Amazon or start out just to see. You never know. It could work with you. I feel like the pay, you know, I know it's gone down every month, kind of like what they're paying for pages read, but it also started out at a point where if you had an epic fantasy novel, you were making more for a borrow than you were for a sale of like a $5 ebook. So I thought it started out pretty high. You know, will I stick with it with the pen name? I don't know. I'll kind of see how it goes. Mm-hmm. The pen name never really gained much traction on the other sites, and that's not the other site's fault. I didn't put a lot of effort into it either, other than the periphery. You know, I'm not interested in doing it with my own stuff and being exclusive with Amazon. I feel that once you do start to depend on on that income, you know, I saw people did the short stories in the first version of Kindle Unlimited, and all of a sudden, and it was pages read instead of just flat borrows, and you know, they might have gone from making thousands a month to lucky to make a couple hundreds a month. So I just kind of tell people to try it, you know. Mm. And if it's not really doing anything great, you might as well be wide. Or if you've gotten to the point where you're thinking, I want to like make my mortgage payment every month with this income, I need it to be regular, I want to rely on it, then I think it also makes a lot of sense to be on all the platforms. You know, Amazon, as much as I would love to say that I make tons and tons of money elsewhere, Amazon's still about 90% for me. But I love that I got to the point where like Kobo and Barnes & Noble and Smashwords iTunes could pay all my bills. Mm. And, you know, even if Amazon went away, which I would assume it won't, but you never know. As I tell people, I think it started out at 35% before I came along as to, you know, what the payout was. Mm. So for a lot of people, if you went from 70 to 35 again, that would be really scary, especially if you're just relying totally on Amazon. So definitely like the, I think most people want to diversify and get paid from lots of places. It's just, you know, you have to weigh it against, can you make more right now over there?
It is a short-term thinking, I think. You know, going exclusive is very short-term. And the other reason, you know, and I'm, again, I preach the global stuff. Have you seen this year a shift in people, in American authors' viewpoint of the rest of the world?
I'm not sure what everybody thinks. I've definitely, it's been interesting for some reason in 2015, my earnings have really gone up a lot in the UK and in Australia. I think it's kind of like my Dragon Blood box set did well here. And it just, for some reason that meant it also did well in the other countries, even though I have no way to advertise there. I mean, I know there's a couple, you know, I think BookPub now is in India and the UK. But, that's about it. There's like, I think there's like the Cuff Forum or something in the UK. I don't really know how to get German, like specifically advertise to those people and say, hey, come check out my book that's in English. I'm sure you want to read it. but I actually do well in Germany. That's kind of my biggest non-English speaking country that buys my books. So I'm stoked. I'm like, I love my UK people this year. I'm just like, especially the exchange rate. I'm like, yeah, I'm getting, that's like the one, you know, what is it called? British pounds, is that right?
Yeah.
The one thing that's higher than the dollar, so I get to convert. I'm like, ooh, yes, that's excellent. Most other places, you're like, India, ooh, I made 5,000 rupees. Like, oh, I can go out for burger.
I can buy my coffee now. But no, you're right. And of course, for me, it's the other way. My biggest income is in US dollars, and translating it into pounds is always quite disappointing. Goes back the other way. But no, so you personally have seen that shift this year. But you talk to a lot of people on your podcast, you know, is the global viewpoint going up? Because that will also make a difference around the platforms, I think.
I feel like a lot of people are still trying to figure out how to sell in the other countries. You know, we've had a couple of Aussie authors on, and they seem to do well. Like, they get it, you know, like they know how to advertise to Australia, New Zealand, and of course America and the UK. But it's still like, we're not quite sure how to get the word out to the other countries. I don't know. Maybe I should ask you, how can I advertise? Or is it just important to be in the top 100 somehow, some way in the other countries on the Amazon sites? Or, you know, I love Kobo, their map that shows you all the different places you've been purchased. I actually just had a contest on my site to help design a couch. It's kind of an ongoing joke in my series. And the winner's in South Africa, so I have to ship 5 books to South Africa. Well, that's cool that I'm being read there. It's going to cost me like a plane ticket worth of shipping to send him his books, but still exciting.
Yeah, and I think the global thing, as far as I've seen, you know, I've sold books in 68 countries. Most of those I don't do any marketing to. I think the fact is that any online is marketing. Like, this interview is going to go out to listeners in like 17 different countries. So, and we didn't advertise the show to them. It just arrived on however they found it. And the same with our books. Like, what you'll find in these smaller markets is, because self-publishing hasn't taken off so much, your book will be number two in, like, at the moment, a French translation of How to Market a Book is like number one on iTunes or something for iBooks in French, because there's basically no other books in that category. So I think we have an advantage in the other countries because there are so few books in those categories. So I think that's it. I mean, you don't even necessarily have to do any separate marketing.
Right. And I think there's a lot to be said, too, for just kind of continuing to publish year mm-hmm. after year and yeah. putting out more books. You know, you get one person finding you in France and they read all your books in your series, you know, that's a good chunk of money. That's more than burgers and lattes, and, you know, and they tell their friends. And I've definitely had a lot of people tell me that they've told their friends to read my books, which I really appreciate. Mm. You know, there's only so much I can do when it comes to marketing, and I'm actually pretty lazy in that category. I see what works and I see what doesn't take a lot of time each month, and that's what I go for.
So what is that for you then? What are you finding works for marketing right now in America in English?
Right. Gosh, it's really the obvious stuff that everybody's doing. You know, I try to release something often. In the months where I don't have a release or, you know, nothing much is going on, I'll try to do the ads for a book one in one of my series. Of course, I always try to get the BookBub ad. Who doesn't? Sometimes it happens. Sometimes it does not. especially with the pen name. BookBub doesn't love the pen name that much. Science fiction romance doesn't really fit into any of their established categories that well. They try to put it under paranormal romance.
That doesn't work.
No, these people want vampires. They don't want spaceships. And anyway, what was my point? Okay, so yeah, I'll do the cycle war. I'll like drop it to 99 cents or make it free or I've got three box sets now, and I've done ads for one is a complete, what do you call it? A duology, I guess, plus a short story. And the other two are the first three books in my respective large series. So I'll just kind of alternate what I try to advertise, and almost every month I'll try to go around and I'll try to get a BookBub. Sometimes that happens, sometimes it doesn't. Try to get a ENT, some of the bigger sites out there that actually can deliver some downloads. And I just kind of look at it as like trying to, every month I'm trying to get some new readers or never heard of me before to check out my stuff. And at this point, sometimes something will stick, like the box sets have, you know, they'll stick, especially if I leave them at 99 cents for at least a while. And that can help because, you know, there's five more full price books in this series that people can read after that. But I don't worry too much about that. I'm just thinking, you know, let me see if I can get out to 100 new people this month. And it just grows. I've got enough people, of course, to sign up for my mailing list and follow along. And because I keep publishing stuff, there's always more stuff for them to buy, which is good. So I think that's just sort of the big thing, is writing the next book, putting the next book out, and trying to make them entertaining so people want to continue on with the series.
And this is the thing. It just feels like it's not rocket science anymore. Maybe it never was, but maybe it really is just write more books and build your email list. Does that kind of sum it up?
Pretty much. Like, I really don't do that much anymore when I launch a book. I'm doing some pre-orders for my series. I think it's about to be the seventh and final book in the series. Maybe the final book. Probably not. The final book in that arc. We'll see. And, you know, I do pre-order. I'm like, hey, everybody, here's the links to it. I email my list when it first goes on pre-order. Facebook, place the links there and on Twitter. And then I will, of course, email again the day it's out. And that's about all I do for marketing of a new book. What I'm going to do is I'll focus on marketing the first book in the series. Since I can't just have people jump in on my books. My series are very much, you have to start at the beginning and read them in order. So I'm envious almost of people who have those open-ended series, like a mystery, you know, where it's a complete story in each one. But I don't know. On the other hand, people that get into a series where it's one complete story. I tend to read all the way to the end because I want to see what happens. So so it's pretty simple, and a lot of it is just kind of sticking with it, being there over time. A lot of the other authors that started around the same time as I have, I've kind of seen them disappear, and you know, some are still there and they're still doing well. But a lot have kind of just fallen off the radar. And it's interesting that some of the people had a really big hit early on. And I almost think that can be kind of a curse, because then you expect that income every month and you just think it's going to keep selling forever. You're like, yeah, I'm awesome. I was the one that was the hit that they say never happens. Maybe because I never had that, I did not have high expectations at any point. So I make like $20 my first month, something like that. I don't even have friends and family that many that actually read the genre. So I can, you know, I've heard people say, well, I made it 99 cents. I emailed all my friends and they bought it, and then it was stuck on Amazon. It's like, wow, I don't know that many people. Congratulations. That must have been nice.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. And that's why I feel like you and I are, you know, similar in that way, and that my income's the same. It ticks up with every book. I've never had like this massive one breakout. But I met an author the other day whose first book made number one on Amazon UK store. And she's just kind of paralyzed with what's coming next. Like, how can the second one hit number one? And I'm like, you just can't guarantee that every book you put out is going to hit number one. It just, in fact, it, 99% likely it won't. So I know what you mean. It's kind of like if you're growing slowly over time versus kind of having this massive hit and then it all falling off. Well, I'd love to have a massive hit as well. But you can't build a business on a lightning strike. You know, you have to build a business on volume and building an audience as you have.
Yeah, and if you have that massive hit, it's going to be so much more awesome if it comes later when you've got 10 or 20 other books for those people to go on and buy. I just think, wow, what a waste if it's your first book and the most you can make per person is $2, you know, if you've got it for $2.99 or $3.99. So.
Yeah.
And so many people forget after one book.
Yes, exactly. And I guess the most important thing for people who are listening who have got that first book coming is to put a link to your email list, so that if you do magically, you know, sell 100,000 copies of your first book, then you get those emails, right? Because that's the other thing that's super important.
Yeah, definitely. And I think you kind of have to think of it yourself as a reader too. Like, how many authors have you read one book and like, this is my new favorite author. I'm going to remember this author forever and ever and ever. You know, for Forrester, and a lot of our readers are, you know, they probably read 3-4 books a week. And it's really easy to forget someone. I think once they've read a whole series by you, like 7 or 8 books or something, you're going to stick in your head. Your main characters are going to stick in their head more, and they're going to, you know, even if they don't sign up for the newsletter, because not everyone will. You know, I definitely try to get those signups, but I've noticed that I sell a lot more books than I have people on my newsletter. Like, you know, it's just not everybody's going to follow on Facebook. Not everybody's into Twitter. Not everybody's, I don't give out my email address too. I don't want any more newsletters. So you try to get those people, but then there are going to be a lot of people that just every now and then they look up their authors that they've enjoyed on Amazon and like, oh, that person's got a new book. Excellent. So it's just, even if you have success with the first book, think about the next one and the next one, because it takes a while for you to really become someone's favorite author or one of their favorite authors. It's no reflection on your writing. It's just that, you know, readers read a lot, so it's easy to forget.
And do you find like I have two separate series at the moment, you know, Action Adventure Arcane and then the London Psychic series, which is much darker mystery. And I find they're completely separate audience. So have you found that with your series, and how do you know whether to write another book in a particular series?
I see that a lot with people, especially if it's like different worlds or, you know, completely different sets of characters. A lot of times I'll try to tie them in, you know, like my other world, just to like, oh, if you liked this series, come try this other series also set in the same world. But I found that with a lot of my stuff, I will get people that read everything. I do have like a contemporary mystery / love story. There's only a kiss. There's no romance. So I can't market it as a romance. Hardly anybody reads that. That's like far enough afield that every now and then somebody will read and be like, oh, I kind of liked that, even though there were no dragons and no magic. So I think that if your series are far enough apart, that you're probably going to have to commit to doing the whole three, at least four books in it before you kind of really evaluate it. And, you know, I do have, I feel like my two main series, Emperor's Edge and Dragon's Blood, most people have read both that like my stuff. They're similar enough in style. They're both secondary world fantasy. So maybe that helps. Maybe I'm lucky to have found some readers that like my, I'd say voice. My stuff is very similar. Yeah, my voice, my quirky characters are very sarcastic. And so there's tends to be quite a bit of humor like that in one series. It's going to be the next series. So I assume they kind of know that. But yeah, I've got other people that only read, have read the series, and they love it. They've done fan art, fan fiction. and then they email, like, can you please write some more with these characters? Like, oh, I wrote 10 books. Maybe someday I'm going to work on some other stuff. And so now I wonder with authors that have been out there for 20, 30 years, you know, do they still get letters from like stuff they wrote in the 80s? Are you ever going to write any more of those, Black Company books there, Mr. Cook?
I'm sure they do, because a book is new to a reader whenever they find it, isn't it? I mean, that's what's so crazy. I think people don't understand why we keep advertising the first in series. And that's why. It's like the first in series was published 4 years ago, 5 years ago, whatever. That doesn't matter. It's new to the person who picks it up today. And I don't think fiction readers look at published dates, do they? I mean, they not like with nonfiction when you do. Fiction doesn't matter.
Yeah, it's probably not going to be like outdated, or you know, it's cute when it's outdated, when they're talking about using phones that are attached to the wall or something. Yeah, so I've had that too. I just had an email not that long ago. Somebody was like cursing me for killing a character. I'm like, killed that character 4 years ago. What are you talking about? Aren't you over that yet? Oh, yeah. He's probably just reading the series. I got it.
Yeah.
So, yep.
I actually get that with the podcast. Someone just emailed me and said, oh, you're going to be in Charleston. And I live near there. And I'm like, well, I was in Charleston like 6 months ago or something. So you kind of missed that. But I wanted to ask you about your podcast. Just tell people about that and where they can find it and what it's about, because and whether podcasting has been good for you.
Sure. It's a science fiction and fantasy marketing podcast. It's the longest show name you'll ever encounter. And if you Google that, you'll find us. It's under marketingsff.com. I want to say that I hate that domain name. I lost the vote to someone who's no longer part of the show. So there you go. But we interview, kind of try to find science fiction and fantasy authors that are doing well or doing something kind of unique. Like we had someone on who's doing Patreon, and you know, we've had someone on, I think we had a Wattpad person on, you know, somebody that's doing well or making some extra money in some other area, or just that had a hit out of the blocks and we kind of want to find out what they did. I say I'm lazy about marketing, but I'm always listening and kind of so I can pick out the gems and try them for myself. And I like to see other people that are doing well with it. Series, you know, we talk about cover art and what's working well for them. Did they do KDP Select or are they wide? There were already a lot of self-publishing podcasts, which I enjoy listening to. I've been listening to yours for several years now, I think before you even had any fiction. And so we wanted to kind of do a niche. As far as selling books, I don't know that it sells any books. I think it is an opportunity, especially by sticking in our genre, to have some marketing, or not marketing, networking kind of things. Like we did a perma-free box set, me and the other two hosts, and we grabbed a few other people that hadn't been guests on there before. And so it's a way to kind of get to know some people in your genre. And if you kind of hero worshiping someone, you know, you can try to get them on the show. It's always nice if you can actually hold up the book for them and like, look, I have your book. I read it. It was good.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure it's hugely about me selling books. It's probably like Twitter and Facebook. You might get some networking opportunities out of it down the road. And I figure it doesn't hurt. It's mostly fun to just kind of see what people are doing and pump them for information.
Yeah. And I feel the same way. Like the podcast is, we spend a lot of time on our own and it's quite nice to connect, and you do learn things and you do connect with people, and their opportunity, it's more like opportunities come up that you either didn't know about or that come up due to knowing people online. But would you, I mean, in terms of, would you recommend podcasting to people as a way of marketing, or, you know, I guess, well, it sounds like it's worth it for you, but it is hard to do a podcast, isn't it?
Yeah, I found I do it with two other guys, Joe Lalo and Jeffrey Poole, who are both fantasy science fiction authors too. And by doing it with someone else, you're like, you have to make an excuse to someone if you don't want to do the show next week. So it's kind of like going to the gym. You know, if you're going with a friend, you might be less likely to cancel. So I've found that easier for me than just, I've tried in the past starting them where it's just me talking, and I find that really more intimidating. And I don't know, I want to edit it more. Mm. We don't actually edit anything. We just record it on Google Hangouts. And unless the intro was really flubbed up or something, or the guest dropped out after 7 minutes, we've edited a couple times. But mostly we just wing it and put it up as it is. So that makes it a little easier than like maybe a more professional show where you're you're hiring someone to edit it, or you're going over it yourself and fixing things up. So that helps. As far as should people do one, the plus side is that it's still relatively uncompetitive. You know, if you actually look up all the self-publishing podcasts, there's still probably only like 10 out there, right? Maybe 20, but that actually have like more than 20 episodes and are regularly producing. So you could do that. Or with our show, we also get traditionally published authors on every now and then, just because we didn't specifically say this is indie only. So, and we've had hybrid people, and it's kind of interesting to have the dog wander off during the show. It's kind of interesting to hear what they've done. And I have to say, it's, as an indie author, usually when I hear what they're doing, traditional published authors, I'm like, wow, they're not really doing anything that's selling any books. Because I kind of know, I'm like a book signing. They'll be like, yeah, I went to a book signing. And, oh, I belong to this. I don't even know. I feel like they actually have a lot to learn from indie authors, because so many of the ones that have made it, it's kind of because their publisher liked them and put a lot of money into advertising for them, and or had really awesome covers. It's been interesting. I definitely say I learned more from the indie authors overall and some of the hybrid people who have done both.
Absolutely. Right. Well, we're coming to the end. And of course, it's been 3 years since you came on the show. If we fast forward and you come back again in 2018, maybe before then, but if we say 3 years, what will things look like, do you think, then?
But yeah, I'll have more books out, but I am to the point now where I'm probably going to be getting into real estate and buying some more rental properties. And I hope to leverage this into being financially independent here within a few years. So I'll still definitely always be writing. I don't see it as anything I want to retire from, but I may not be quite so driven to publish something every month. So we'll see. Three years is a long time, and yet 3 years ago does not seem like that long ago right now. So we'll see. I love self-publishing, and you know, right now I feel like it's still that golden age. So for people that are just getting started, it's not too late. It's still possible to do really well, especially if you're just consistent and keep writing and keep growing your fan base. And so I hope I will continue to do all those things and still be pumping them out in 3 more years.
Fantastic.
Writing what I enjoy.
Yeah, fantastic. And I think I'll be doing the podcast in 3 years. I mean, it's crazy that, you know, it's coming up to nearly 6 years, I think, of the podcast, which is just ridiculous. So yeah, time does fly, but I certainly think that self-publishing will, maybe we won't even call it self-publishing anymore by 2018. It would just be so mainstream that it won't be something separate. So it'll be really interesting. But anyway, Lindsay, where can people find you and your books online?
All right. I'm at lindsaybaroker.com. And if you even get close to spelling that, you'll probably find my site, because I'm the only one. They're on Amazon, they're on Kobo, they're on iBooks. And check out, if you want more, hearing what people are doing and hoping and becoming successful doing it, science fiction and fantasy marketing podcast. There's a link. You'll find it. It's the URL I hate it, remember?
Yeah.
So that's it. I'm everywhere. I'm on the social media too, if you're out there.
Brilliant. Well, thanks so much for your time, Lindsay. That was great.
All right. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You might also like the backlist episodes at thecreativepen.com/podcasts. You can also get your free author 2.0 blueprint at thecreativepen.com/blueprint. If you'd like to connect, you can tweet me at thecreativepen or find me on Facebook at thecreativepen. See you next time.